Welcome to the Nurture Hub Pregnancy and Birth Podcast with your hosts, Shari Lyon and Nicola Lay.
Together, we bring over 30 years of experience in working with women and partners through education, breathing, mindfulness, and evidence-based information, and nurturing you through this transformation into motherhood.
Join us on this journey as we connect with women and partners, mentoring, supporting, and navigating the ups and downs of becoming parents.
Good afternoon, beautiful. We are here today with our beautiful friend, Amberlee Buendicho. I think I'm saying your name right. Amber runs the most amazing, an amazing company called Power of Birth. And we had the most fantastic event on Saturday, which was just breathtaking and emotional, and I love everything that Amberlee's been doing on her journey up to now. We've known each other for a while. So I just wanted listeners to feel inspired to move forward when they have a birth trauma experience, or how they can look at their birth in a way that's positive in all moments, in all areas, and looking at how they can change things and being educated in what it's like to come into postpartum. So today, Shari and I are very excited to be saying hello to you.
Hi, Amber. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for asking me.
So how about we start with your why? Why have you decided to run this amazing organization?
Firstly, I love that you think I'm an organization and that I give off that effect. But it's just simply me, and it was just an Instagram page, and I actually created it because I was really anxious leading up to my second birth after birth trauma, another hyperemesis pregnancy. And I noticed throughout my journey becoming a mum that everybody wanted to tell you their birth story. And I was never mad about that. I was obsessed with them prior. And I actually watched my sister-in-law give birth before I'd had children, and she births amazingly. She's had three children now, and every single birth was very empowering for her. And I just noticed that this was a profound moment in women's lives. And so I was like, well, why not just put it on socials and whatever? And so I called it The Power of Birth because my understanding back then was birth and becoming a mother was what changed you. But now I know that it's matrescence and it's this umbrella, and it's actually so much more than just birth. Or you don't have to become a mum in that way either. And so it was sort of like before I knew what I knew now, what I know now. And it's been such a journey. And I honestly can't tell you, I never in my mind ever imagine it being what it is now, you know, a website for support and platforms and events and a podcast and just networking and meeting amazing women. I'm so blessed. I can't believe that it is what it is now, and that it is, it's just evolved so much, and I've gone with the flow and the demand. And, you know, I just was like, all right, well, if this is where the wind's taking me, I'm going with it. So
after, when you decided to run this, how has it progressed from this sort of idea to now? What have the achievements been?
So it was just originally supposed to be a social media page sharing women's birth stories. And I started noticing patterns in their stories and was like, I don't think I'm okay with the way things are. And I knew I wasn't anyway because of my first birth. And so then I ran an event for Panda, which wasn't really attached to The Power of Birth. That was just my passion coming out, and my good friend Ari, who had shared with me some insight into where she was at in her perinatal mental health journey, which was really devastating to hear. And I was just like, this is shit and this isn't good enough. And I get really angry that we aren't talking about these things. and that women are suffering in silence. And I just wasn't okay with it. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to do an event and we're going to spread the word. We're just going to go big. And so the event evolved in itself. It was supposed to be just like a backyard event, sharing with our local community, to this amazing venue at the island. And we sold out and it was just incredible. And I had a lot of feedback after that. And so I just thought, all right, I'm going with this. I'm just going to do this. So I was like, women need more support. How can I support them? And so that's why the website came up and the blog, and then more opportunities to share stories. And I learn through storytelling. So I love it when people share with me their experiences, because then I'm like, I'm a psychology student as well. I'm doing my thesis this year. So I think the scientist in me was like, oh, I can see patterns, and we need to do better, because I'm seeing too many negative patterns and not enough positive patterns. So I guess that's how it evolved. And it was all sort of by accident.
And obviously meant to be. Yeah. And I think, I mean, all of us have come into working with women and sharing this information through our own experiences, all being very different experiences, being drawn to this line of work so that other women have better experiences than maybe what we do. Or for me, it was similar experiences where I felt so empowered. So I think it's really beautiful that you are trusting the universe and where the universe is leading you, because you're obviously here for a reason, to share this platform, to share this information so that, you can empower women in the future. And I think that's really beautiful. So congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you. So, it's so crazy, you know, because just tell me to stop talking if I'm talking too much. Good. But it's funny that you say that, Shari, right? Because I think of myself pre-baby and I was a feminist, you know, and I was all about human rights and changing the world and all that, but it was all sort of like, I'm like, how do I say this? It was all sort of like more human trafficking based, and like these really, really big issues that I just thought, we need to be doing something about this. And then the moment I became pregnant, I was just like, what the fuck? And I was actually, I was working as a flight attendant at the time, and I'd taken some unpaid leave to go to Africa, Ghana, to work at a mental hospital as part of my prac at uni. And 6 weeks before I was ready to leave, I'd fallen pregnant unexpectedly. And we weren't planning children. We weren't talking about children. And I know that can be really hard to hear for some people, and I am sorry. But that was where I was at. And so I fell pregnant. My husband knew before I knew. And anyway, I went to my boss and was like, oh no, like I've fallen pregnant and I've got like this leave and like I'm leaving to Africa. Like, what do I do? And maybe I should just shorten it. I should still be able to go. Like, I'm just pregnant, right? Like, it's not a big deal. And she said to me, well, what if you get sick? And I was like, oh yeah, I guess people get sick. I think I must've been like 3 weeks pregnant at that point. And anyway, didn't think much of it and just sort of was trekking along. And then week 6, hyperemesis gravidarum hit me like an absolute ton of bricks. I'd never heard the word hyperemesis before though. And so I just thought I was experiencing morning sickness and that this is what it was. 8 weeks later of being bedridden or hanging my head in a toilet bowl or in the shower, feelings of being poisoned. I think that's like the best description for me. I still think pregnancy is poison. I don't understand how it can't be anything else. And anyway, 8 weeks later, I was just like, this just isn't right. So we decided to tell my family that I was pregnant. And, you know, everybody's so happy for you and all of these things. But I was not happy. And I just wasn't getting answers. It didn't matter who I'd seen, who I'd spoken to, what I Googled even. Nothing was coming up. It was all morning sickness. And, you know, my mum's giving me ginger biscuits and, you know, so I just, And bless them, they obviously were trying to help and they had no idea, just like I had no idea. So a lot of it stemmed from that experience of being undiagnosed my whole pregnancy and then not being prepped for birth because I'm trying to just survive every day, right? I'm not even really thinking about birth. And when I think about birth, all I think about is pain. So, and I'm already in so much pain, so it's just too much to bear. So I don't want to think about birth. So then I get to my birth and I go into labor a week early. And because I had hyperemesis, it was, I probably should say I did try and go back to work, which resulted in a lot of vomiting in the car on the way to work, vomiting on the bus from the staff car park to the aeroplane, vomiting in the crew room, vomiting on the plane, working in the air. And when I worked with other mums, they were awesome. They were just a saving grace. And a lot of them were like, what are you doing here? But I'm like, my workplace had told me morning sickness was not an excuse to take extended leave. So I just thought I had to suck it up and keep going. And of course, there were days where I was just like, I have to take sick leave. Like, there's just no way I can go today. I had a lot of days like that. But anyway, I went on mat leave early. So I come to my birth and I go into spontaneous labor at 39 weeks. And we didn't have the car seat in the car. I didn't have a hospital backpack. Like, I was just not, everyone says you go over your first. So I'm just like, oh, you know, we've got plenty of time. There's no rush. Nah. Anyways, I was in a birth center with a private midwife. So I'd had continuity of care. And again, they never picked up the hyperemesis. Still blows my mind. And it was a long and difficult labor. When you think about the fact that I hated my body and I had no belief in my body, I was not connected to my baby at all. My baby would move and I'd feel angry because it would make me more nauseous and it would make me, and it hurt and it, you know, and it would remind me that I was pregnant. So I really did not enjoy pregnancy. And I look back and that could have been so different if I had the right treatment and the right support and the right understanding. So this is how I went into birth. And despite being in continuity of care, which is preached to the nines about, you know, having better birth outcomes and all this sort of stuff, I ended up with, after 22 hours, accepting an epidural because, well, the whole time I couldn't sit down. So by 22 hours, I was like, my legs are numb. I'm on fire. I just want to lay down. And my midwife offered to break my waters. If I knew what I knew now, the answer would be no. So she broke my waters and things obviously got far more intense. I accepted the epidural and I was 8 centimeters and I was pushing about 2 hours later for 40 minutes. My midwife was really amazing at that point. And she kept telling me, she was like, you can do this. We can see his head. He's here. He's coming. Come on. But I think she was really pushing me to get him out because she knew that he was in distress, apparently. So next minute, 4 doctors rush in asking me whether or not I would prefer forceps or a vacuum. Again, didn't know I could decline. So I said to them, well, what would you do? Because I'm like, I've never seen a forceps in my life. I knew what a vacuum was because a friend had a vacuum birth that was traumatic for her. So I'm just thinking, well, that's not an option. So what the heck are forceps? Mm. And if only I knew what I knew now. And so I accepted a forceps vaginal birth, which resulted in a 3B tear. And I fainted when they pulled him out because that was just so barbaric. If you've ever seen what forceps look like, I know you two have, they should just not be part of birth or maternity practice at all. It is, if we look back at the tools that doctors used to use on women, you know, in the twilight sleep stage of birth back in that era, they look exactly the same as the tools that they were using back then, which now we think are barbaric. And I'm very anti-forceps. They are just not okay because of the damage that they do to women. And it's not worth it It's not worth it. So then, of course, this belief or non-belief in my body, in myself, I can't be pregnant, I can't birth, feelings of, you know, so that impacted my breastfeeding journey and, you know, just all of it mixed together. And I remember a physio visiting me in the hospital and she said, you know, you're really high risk for a prolapse. It was the first time I'd ever heard the word prolapse. And she said, you're also really high risk for fecal incontinence. So basically shitting yourself. And I was like, okay, this is a lot to take in. I've like barely processed what just happened. Well, how do I not get this? And she was pretty good. Like, I know that they sort of do their rounds and things, but I did feel like she was really informative, but I held on to every single word she said, because I was like, I am so determined not to shit myself for the rest of my life. I can't even say the word P-O-O and my friends will laugh at me because like, I don't deal very well with that stuff. So the fact that I was going to have fecal incontinence, I was like, no, this cannot happen to me. And mind you, there was already signs of it in the hospital. I did shit myself in the hospital. I couldn't hold my wind. I was so battered and bruised and swollen and bloody and sore and in so much pain. I remember being in the shower and trying to like hose myself down after shitting myself. And I couldn't get in because I was just like this huge balloon. And I'm just thinking, how is this birth? I was so confused. I was like, women do this all the time. And then they're running at 6 weeks postpartum. Like, how in the world? And all of these things are going through my head. And again, not believing that it could do it. And so I was just like, this just isn't for me. I just can't do this. And then blaming myself too. I made myself sick. The birth is my fault. I should have known better. You know, all of the things that we tell ourselves. Anyway, do you want me to keep going?
Okay, go. Keep going. I'm enthralled. I'm here.
Just cut me off. So that all of that fed into my postpartum journey and the way that I felt. I was riddled with anxiety. And I am the least anxious person, particularly before I had babies. Very confident, very happy. Like, I'll walk into a room and talk to anybody in there. Like, I had no anxiety. I'd never had it before. So when it was happening to me, I was just like, what is this? Mm. Which is funny because I'd studied psychology and I was with a child health nurse one day. She was helping me breastfeeding and she said, I think you're experiencing some postnatal anxiety. And it was a revelation to me. I was like, oh, of course this is what it is. Yes, it's anxiety. And it actually made me feel so much better because I didn't feel crazy anymore. I could label it. I could understand it, which is what I wanted for my pregnancy, looking back as well. That would have helped me so much. Anyway, so I did some things to try and handle this anxiety. And by 6 months postpartum, I was feeling good. I was like, I am okay. Physically not great with my pelvic floor, but emotionally, I was feeling good. And I was doing all the things to make sure I was on top of my pelvic floor. And I wasn't listening to this toxic bounce back culture that we have either, because that's so dangerous for women. And so I was ignoring all of that and trying really hard not to compare my experience to my girlfriend's experiences, because a lot of them did have really amazing births. So they just could not relate to me in any way. And so it took me 5 months to be intimate with my husband again. Terrified.
That's quite quick.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because I look back and I'm just like, I don't even know. I must have just convinced myself because I was really terrified and I had no pressure from him. He was really great. So anyway, we do it and I fall pregnant that one time.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. And I still feel stupid to this day, but then I feel angry when I have those feelings because I'm like, well, that's not my fault. That's on you, mate. So I remember when it happened, I was like, I know I'm going to be pregnant. And I did a test a couple weeks later and I was, and I said to my husband, it's fine if I'm not sick. I can do this. I've got this. I'll be fine. We'll just, you know, sort out what the heck I have to do about my pelvic floor and stuff. But like, I'm going to be fine. It's going to be fine. Week 7, hyperemesis hit. And now I have a baby to care for. My husband had just taken over the company he works for as well. So he was non-existent and he felt like he was stuck in a hard place. Cause it's like, well, if he leaves to the company to be with me, the company goes to shit. But then, so it's just easier to leave me. Right. And which is fine. And anyway, just so many things looking back when you start thinking about it again, but I hit rock bottom this time around. I finally had the courage to go to hospital because I just didn't think they'd take me seriously. So I finally was like, I haven't eaten or had something to drink in 4 days. I feel like I'm going to die. That sounds like an over-exaggeration, but I literally felt that way. And, you know, I'm sitting on the floor vomiting nothing because there's nothing in me in front of my 6-month-old, my 7-month-old. So I call my mom and I say, I think I need to go to hospital. I can't keep going. And she took me to hospital. My husband came home to take care of my son. And the hospital took me in, which was a fear of mine driving to the hospital. I really thought that they would just be like, oh, it's morning sickness. Go home. You'll be right. But they took me in and they said the words hyperemesis. And again, a label changed my frigging life. I was like, oh my gosh. So it's not morning sickness. What is hyperemesis? And I had all these questions. Anyway, I never went back to hospital. I should have. I didn't know that I could keep going back for IVs and all that sort of stuff. So again, there were still gaps, but I had this label now and it gave me some power and I had the same midwife. So she, I said the words hyperemesis to her and she was like, oh yeah, of course. Here, take this and this and this. And what? I'm still like banging my head against a wall about that. Anyway, I was really anxious about my second birth. I was anxious about my pelvic floor and having another third degree tear because the risk was quite high, having a prolapse and all the things that come with it. And of course the fecal incontinence, which I hadn't had since I'd left the hospital the first time around. So my friend Ari introduced me to you, Nicola, and Shari, you were actually on this call as well because it was during COVID. COVID had just happened. I was 40 plus 6. I think. And my friend was like, go and do this breathing thing. Like it might help you in labor with your anxiety and stuff. And I was like, oh, okay. So it was the first time I was introduced to you, Nicola and Shari. And I was like, I didn't actually get too much out of that. Obviously I had hyperemesis, so I was where I was. But I thought, oh yeah, breath work. Like that's definitely a tool I could take. Because I noticed I did that sort of automatically in my first birth. So I was like, yeah, like this is something. Anyway, they wanted to induce me, which terrified me even more. But thankfully my baby came 2 days before the induction date and she came hard and fast. I remember the first contraction and just thinking, whoa, I am not going to be able to do this from the first contraction because it was that intense. She was born 2.5 hours later from that first contraction. And if my mom had not have come over, she would have been born at home. My mom saw me and was like, we got to go. We got to get out of here. She'd had 6 babies, so she was a pro. And it was the first time I had my mom with me to birth as well. I didn't have her the first time. And she always says to me, things would be so different if I was there. And they probably would have been. Anyways, that birth was so hard and fast. I was vomiting the whole way through it. So it was contraction, vomit, contraction, vomit, contraction, vomit. And I just could not catch a break. Anyway, she was born. I was wheeled into, I was sort of on my knees on the wheelchair and I was wheeled into the birthing suite and she was born on my knees and, my waters never broke. So I remember thinking like, they're like, she's here. And I'm thinking, I'm pushing, my body's pushing, I'm not doing anything, my body's doing it, but my waters haven't broken. Like, I can't push, it's too early. And like, I start freaking out in my mind, but I can't express that because, you know, you're in so much pain. And anyway, she was born in her sac, her amniotic sac, wow, which was pretty cool. But she was also over 4 kilos, she was 4.1 kilo. She was a big baby. I don't know how, because I lived off nothing. It's pretty amazing how our babies grow. Oh my goodness. But I had a 3B tear again. So I was a blubbering mess because I just thought, here we go again. But I've got to tell you, having that 3B tear without the forcep, massive difference. Not even remotely close to the pain that I was in. Like the fact that I could just sit on my lounge instead of having to sit on like this weird donut thing. Mm. Like I can sit on my lounge, but I have a 3B tear. You know, it was weird. So I, all of that, and I think a lot of it I never unpacked because I didn't actually have the capacity to because of the hyperemesis. So going into my postpartum the second time around in COVID, so no help, with another 3B tear and lots of anxiety about prolapse and all of that, I was a psychotic mess. That's honestly how I would describe myself. I was so angry. So I have, like, my family probably say I'm an angry person. I say I'm an animated person.
I'm going to take that. I actually really like that.
I do too.
And I think it comes with passionate people, right? Yes. You just sort of have this fire. And, but that definitely, this fire postpartum was not a fire. It was something wrong. There was something wrong. And so I tried lots of different things. You couldn't get into a psychologist back then for like 6 months. So I used things like Panda and all that sort of stuff. And I am very pro, what support can I find? How do I get it? What do I do? I want to be better. I don't want to stay like this. So what do I do? And yeah, mind you, I'm still studying all hours of the night as well throughout all of this. So I just didn't stop, which is a big regret looking back. And yeah, anyways, I feel like I'm blubbering now. So it led me to postpartum, which led me to support like things like breath work and also then unpacking what has just happened the last couple of years, because I haven't had a chance to actually do that. So yeah.
Wow. Oh, I feel for you. It just breaks my heart that was your experience. And
yeah,
thank you for sharing. It's I just want to give you a hug.
I know.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot. And I think, you know, there are many of us that don't realize how severe this can be for others, because every experience is just so different.
Hyperemesis is something that obviously you and I, Amberly, have really, really talked about before. But yeah, the first time I was misdiagnosed, second baby that we miscarried, I knew I was pregnant so early because it rised up in me. And I sat at the toilet going, no way, this can't come back. And then people saying, oh, second time, all gets worse every pregnancy. And I'm just like, how am I meant to control? And I remember, just like you said, Taylor Fern, my eldest, was, you know, she was so young, and trying to cook her stuff and holding like cloths to my face so I wasn't throwing up in her food, and Anthony worked away. So hyperemesis is something that people don't really know enough about. And the depletion going into your birth after having hyperemesis is something that I can't even explain.
Are they looking into it? Like, does anyone understand it? Like, why? What triggers it? Why does it hit certain women and then it doesn't?
Because I think I was talking to Shari a while ago about my own health since having hyperemesis. I've never been okay since. So my body's always been in a state of depletion. And they were saying to me that it can come from high metals in your body, that hyperemesis can be caused from that, which is, I'm going to take that, because if that helps any listeners out there, go get your bloods checked for those things as well before you fall pregnant. But I don't know if you know anything else about that, Amberly.
Yeah, so there's recent research that's just come out that they've discovered there's a specific gene in some women that triggers hyperemesis gravidarum.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
So I'm just like, we're unlucky. Like, I don't know how to take it.
I think
they used to think it was the placenta.
Yeah, they did, didn't they? Yeah. And I think when you speak to health professionals, when you're in the moment of hyperemesis and they're trying to give you all the different things that you can take, which I never got offered first time. But second time I was taking all the tablets because I wouldn't have been able to look after my youngest, my only child at the time, if I hadn't taken it. But, you know, and then you read the side effects and you're like, oh my gosh, like, is my child going to come out deformed or is there something going to happen to this child?
Yeah.
What am I doing? Like, I can't survive. I think I might die if I don't take it. So even if the tablets wore off by like half an hour, it would be the violent feeling of, oh my God, it's rising. It would cause me heart palpitations, severe sweating, incontinence. And then I don't know if you got this, but if I wasn't throwing up, it would be the other end. So I was always constantly on the toilet. And so I was just like, oh, I'd rather be on the toilet than throwing up. So I'll just have that. And when you're pregnant, like, you're worrying. But like you just, I mean, for listeners out there, and this sounds like a horror story, but it has to be talked about because the awareness of hyperemesis needs to be lifted. And also, what can you do to support yourself while you have hyperemesis is really, it's valuable information. Because I remember sitting in the group of mothers that I had for my first baby, and they're all looking at me going, oh, you're sick again? Like I was some kind of weirdo. And I just wish that I'd had like a support group of women that were going through it at the same time where we could all go, I feel like shit today, do you? Yeah, I do. And I just remember seeing my friend who was in the next apartment to me just, you know, all glowing, and she looked beautiful, and I just looked like I was sick mess.
Oh yeah, I can relate to that for sure.
So I think when I saw you, you invited me to speak at that Panda event. I was so felt so privileged to be part of that, and I remember listening to, you know, all the people standing on stage talking about their own journeys. And honestly, most birth workers or most people that are involved with women that are pregnant have either got this really strong mission or they've come from trauma to help support women to move out of that and to change the way that we're looking after women today. And I feel that really resonated with me when I was there on that day. And yeah, it's led me to be your biggest supporter in the help of postnatal moving onwards from that. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And I think it's funny, you know, I look back in my postpartum journey the second time around, and I was about 6 months postpartum when my husband was like, come on, you've got to get into a psychologist. Like, this is your thing. Like, you're all about psychology. Like, you need to go and see one. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. I just got to suck up the wait time because I was just so bitter about the wait time. I'd never booked in. Anyway, but the day before my appointment, no, it must have been the day of my appointment, I remember Googling hyperemesis again, and I hadn't done that in a really long time. And I found Hyperemesis Gravidarum Australia, Caitlin, who's behind that organization. And I burst into tears because of all of the things you just said, because there is a community out there of women that I have had no idea. Here I am suffering alone because nobody around me has had this before. And if only I knew about them. And honestly, I reached out to Caitlin and things, and I unpacked a lot of hyperemesis trauma in my sessions with the psychologist and things. And that just kept coming up. But so I had EMDR therapy, which is apparently very good for trauma. I know it doesn't work for everybody. And anyway, I reached out to Caitlin and I was just like, I don't think you know what you're doing and the impact that it has. And it's funny, you know, so now my youngest is two, so I'm only technically 2 years postpartum, and I'm so doing my thesis and getting into research and all that sort of stuff. I have stumbled across limited evidence, but evidence for peer-to-peer support and being around a community of women who have had the same experiences of you and with you and helping each other. And the evidence is strong anecdotally for one, and then what we have scientifically. And so I'm like, why is nobody paying attention to this? Because a lot of psychological research is based on, you know, particular therapies? Do they work? Do they not? And so they're looking at debriefing and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So I think that's the route I'm going to take. But I was just like, yeah, there is something to this. And I have felt that as a person. I felt that for sure. And, you know, when you're, I think it's even stronger, like just being around women where you're able, so a space like this, for example, where you are able to share your experience with no filter, no judgment, full vulnerability, and having people accept that, there is something really powerful about that. And I think we have, not everybody is able to do it. And I have noticed that throughout my journey and just my observations with other people, talking to other people, because you get the judgment comments and things, you know, come out and their own biases. But there is something really powerful with removing your bias and just being in that space with that person, and you share, they share, whatever the dynamic is. And I just think, women have the answers. We have the answers. We need to be collectively coming together and doing this, whether it be virtually or in person or whatever. But yeah, I absolutely feel the power to that. And that's from doing it.
Yeah. And don't you think that what's lacking now, and Shari and I have talked about this so many times, especially through COVID, is the lack of the village. You know, in a village of women many, many moons ago, it wouldn't matter if you were unwell during your pregnancy. Everyone would have rallied around to hold that space for you. You know, postpartum, you probably wouldn't have got so much depression because we would have all been there helping each other out. And I think that's the sadness of that, is that it's got to change, you know. And I think that's why we're on such a mission with what we're doing with our podcasting and our own work, you know, individually, is how can we help you? What do you need? What space do you need me to hold for you? Like, what's your journey? And with no judgment, mask off, full vulnerability, holding that space for everybody as a unique person. Whether you have a positive birth experience, whether it's a traumatic experience, how can we make that different next time? What do you need to do to change that story? And that's why I love the birth, you know, all of your why. And that's why it was so beautiful being here in that virtual event at the weekend, you know, watching these amazing, strong women standing, doing their discussion about all the women, what they're trying to do, create a difference in the world. And it's breathtaking. There was nearly a few tears, weren't there, at the weekend?
I think that's part of it though too, hey, like, what was I going to say? It's funny because I talk to some people and yeah, their bias or their judgment comes up, and that's from their own personal experience. And I can accept that to be that way. And not everybody does the work. But it's funny because I honestly, there was a point in my life in the last 2 years where I didn't want to be looking at pregnant women or being around that conversation, or, but you know, I've got the power of birth, right? So I sort of have to be if I want to be present in this space. And so I had to get myself to a point where my story is not always projected. We're always projecting our stories, right? It's why we do what we do. I had to get to a point where I was like, I'm not doing this for me. This is not something that I'm doing as part of my healing anymore. And if I want to accept women in this space of all experiences, I have to put my story aside, because it doesn't always matter. It matters, but it doesn't always matter. So for example, I think I was talking to you about this the other day, Nicola, I had unwanted pregnancies right at the time. I love my children. But how the heck am I going to have a conversation with a woman who's had a miscarriage and desperately wanted her baby and had a beautiful pregnancy? A girlfriend of mine just lost her baby at 40 weeks. How am I going to come into that space with her and have her share her experience with me, knowing she knows how I feel about pregnancy and all that sort of stuff? And so it was like, it just was so real to me. I was like, I have to get to a place where that just doesn't matter. right? It's happened. I'm on my healing journey. I'm getting there. I feel like I'm almost at the end of it, but it's like, it doesn't have to come back up every time I'm in this conversation. So I think that's probably the biggest learning curve I've had, where it's not all about me. And so I've really tried to make the power of birth a space that's not about me. And I've been very conscious of being able to do that as well, because I want a variety of experiences, because we can learn from each other. And that was part of it.
I love that so much. And Shari and I, we're fiercely that, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah. And admitting to, you know, we were just talking about this in the kitchen before, that even with the years of supporting women and the message that in each moment I was, you know, I'm so passionate about, but now I'm also at a place where I reflect back and go, you know what, I've actually changed because I've met other people and met Nicola and had other people share more information with me, which has then changed my views or perspective on now how I share this information to make sure that, well, as much as I can in each moment, that I'm not, you know, I want all to feel inclusive. But at the same time, though, I don't think you can ever do that either, because you never know what journey everyone has been on, and you could say something that to you feel so innocent, but then they can take it so in such a different perspective and be triggered by it. So it's like, it's all learning and respecting people's journeys and respecting the sharing that we want to be here to support without trying to project our, do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah,
project
totally.
Our beliefs or perceptions or what we think in that moment is right, because other people may not take it like that. But yeah, it's and I think that's where the power of community comes from, being able to learn from each other and hear these experiences and be able to reflect then on your own experience and then how you're going to support more women in the future. And yeah, so we're always learning. If you're not learning,
always.
You're not growing. And
absolutely.
It's just even, you know, hearing your journey, Amberly, like I've actually never heard a birth story like yours. And so it's putting other things into perspective for me. And I love what you're doing. And, you know, where do you want this to go? Like,
yeah, where's the vision?
Yeah, because we want to be a part of it for sure.
Well, it's funny. Originally the idea was that I'll use like the Parabirth brand or whatever it is, and open my own clinic and have a variety, or so having peer-to-peer support and having all of that, but having, and of course, you know, a business has to make money, but I was just having this conversation with my husband the other day. So he's a financial planner, which is amazing because I don't have to think about that. But also, so he's very business minded and all that sort of thing. And so we were chatting about how the heck we could make something like this work. And because I said to him, you have to make it work for me, because I want to be able to give back. So it's not just about someone paying me as a psychologist. I want to be doing, I want Nicola to be coming and doing breathwork sessions in this space. I want to be doing free peer-to-peer support facilitations. I want to be, you know, I want to be having women's circles and like people learning about matrescence. Oh, you've just had a baby. You need to go to the Power of Birth clinic. They've got a free this, that, whatever it is. So that's sort of in a nutshell what I've been thinking of. I'm still a good 2 years away from that at least. I'm just going to finish my damn studies and get on with my life. But I think that's where it will go. But honestly, I'm open to anything. So while I say this is the vision and this is where it's going to go, if an opportunity arises that I cannot say no to, I'll take it. And who knows, I might end up with a clinic or something like that, doing these things, you know, 20 years from now or whatever it be. But I want to be working with women, and I want women to know their support and that they're not broken, and that we can talk about these experiences, because we are not going to judge each other. And I have a real issue with that in motherhood. And it's one of the reasons I actually never went to a mother's group, because I was so fearful of judgment, because I wasn't coping and all of that. So I'm really fierce about that. When I hear women judging other women, particularly about their experiences, I'm on that because I'm not okay with it. And we need to break that down. And I hate that it's gotten to that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess that's the vision.
I love your vision. So in a kind of rounding it up, which is just, yeah, so many things you could unpack in this one conversation for someone that's listening. For you, what would you recommend to a woman if she arrives into pregnancy and she's got health issues or hyperemesis or something that's not right for her? What would you suggest that she does now?
You know, it's insane. This answer would have been very different maybe a year ago. But I'm going to say, search the hashtag on Instagram, because you will find people. Honestly, we're not Googling anymore, are we?
No,
everything's
not.
On social media now. That's how women find me. And I've had amazing conversations and been able to. I'm also a PSI support volunteer. So I'm part of Postpartum Support International, where women can reach out to me and I can filter through support for them. Like, you can go here and here and here. And I find the support for them. So I use that in the power of birth, because I'll have women who've had these really traumatic birth experiences. Just, I'll get a random email one day and, whoa, okay, you're not okay. You don't know who to tell. There's nobody in your community that you feel safe with. So you've reached out to a complete stranger who does this online because that's where you feel safe. And it's all part of that community, isn't it?
Mm.
So if you're afraid to go to the mother's group, look up the hashtag, find a page, connect with somebody who's doing this work in this space. They will be able to help you. I do say be careful, of course. There's always things on social media you'll find that may be triggering, or that person was not helpful. So yeah, do your homework if you can. But yeah, I think the biggest thing is probably speak up, tell someone you're not okay and that you need help. People want to help. You might be met with some judgment because people are ignorant and don't understand what you're going through. But I think the biggest thing is speaking up. And whether that be to a GP or a child health nurse or a friend or your mum or a complete random on the internet, speak up. It's important. We need your voice.
Mm. And how can people find you, Amberlee? Where can we send people to find you, to follow you and what you're doing?
So I'm mostly on Instagram at The Power of Birth, or I have a website, thepowerofbirth.net, which is full of resources and things, because I try and, whatever I'm filtering out to these individuals, I try and filter out on the website as well. And I have a podcast as well, but that is more, I guess, like you guys, a place for women to share their stories and it be that collective voice. So there's like a few ways, but honestly, email, Instagram DM, I'm always open to hearing and supporting. That's the biggest part of it. It's all about support.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been really, it's always, for anyone that's listening, if you're feeling triggered by this conversation, please reach out to us. We can send you to the right places, or reach out to Amberlee and she will put you in touch with who you might need to speak to. And for those women that have hyperemesis for the first, you know, through the first pregnancy and you're wanting to fall pregnant again, please don't feel resistant. Just move forward and get all the help that you need. You know, I know that Amberlee's done that. I've definitely had another two pregnancies since then, and we all come out the other side. It's just the support that you feel on the inside of that is the most important. So thank you, Amberlee.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me.
We hope that you've enjoyed this episode and that it's helped you on your own journey. We would love it if you would subscribe and leave us a review.
To learn more about our individual online or face-to-face courses or be mentored by us for your own birth, please see our show notes for the links to our programs.